for September 9th at blueskiesturnblack.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
What's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
Don't look at me like a criminal. I'm just a chick trying to find my way. I know that time's so critical, but I'm gonna save the world another day. Cause I got a lot to learn, lots of places to see, and this is what I deserve. I wanna live for me. Don't look at me like a criminal. I'm only trying to find my way. Don't look at me like a criminal. You're not alone, we ain't got bills to pay. And though the times are critical, I'm gonna save the world another day. Cause I got myself to love, plenty of people to meet. So if I crash and burn, at least I live for me. Don't look at me like a criminal. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Africa Spence. I know her as Des, and she's a proud second-generation Jamaican-Canadian, a lover of all things arts, with a speciality in film creation, painting, and spoken word. She has completed both film production and film studies training at Concordia University and the New York Film Academy. Africa has also garnered notice as an official selection in several film festivals, including but not limited to the Caribbean Tales International Film Festival, Montreal Independent Film Festival, Webfest TO, and the New York International Arts Festival. As for painting and spoken word, this self-taught artist has performed for organizations such as Toronto Artscape and been featured in galleries such as the BC Pentagon Gallery. From 2016 to present day, most of her attention has been building a passion project, Voetry, a docu-series that combines spoken word poetry and the visual arts. Des, Africa, welcome, welcome to the show. This is not the first time. You've been on the show before, a long, long time ago.
Really? I don't think, I know some of my work was used on some of my poetry. So I was really, really thankful for that at the time because it was my beginnings. It was the very start, yeah. Budding. And now to do full circle and be here again is awesome. It's wonderful.
Well, welcome. Whether it is officially the first time or it is the next time, welcome. Very happy to have you. Been watching you work. And I said we have to get you on so that we can spread the word even more than it's already spreading.
Oh, Kim, making me feel special.
We all are special.
And I love
I'm
it.
I'm so special, so special, so special.
I love it, I love it, I love it.
That's how we do. So it's been a very strange 2 years, you know, since 2020 to now. And we always like to check in with our guests, like how has this whole pandemic situation been for you? Like how did that shape up for you?
Ooh, it's been such a mixture, but honestly, I have a bit of a love-hate kind of relationship with it. I guess if I would start on the negative, I was in the middle of doing some of my projects, and that kind of ended up hitting a standstill when it comes to the actual filming. But on the flip side of things, being kind of stuck at home made me sit there with the content that I had and the information that I had and really buckle down on how do I tweak, you know, my wording and how do I present, how do I pitch, and honestly, I've been able to at least use that time to garner some recognition that I didn't know I could, you know, tap into. So
yeah
some of that time was spent pivoting my attention. Other than that, the mental, like many, it started getting to me. How did I keep kind of afloat, I guess? Calls, friends were still there in many ways, even if the physical touch and the, you know, actual seeing is a little different. I can't lie, people were still there for me. People didn't necessarily fall off. We were a community and we kept in touch.
Yeah, I find that to be really important, especially now, like having a good sense of community and strong friendships that can stand the test of time, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I find nowadays people are very disconnected. And even before the pandemic, people are not like, I really felt old. You know, I value things like communication, long conversations.
Yeah.
I will do the texting thing because it's just a part of our lives today. But on any given day of the week, I prefer a phone call before a text. And you're not going to get me going, well, why didn't you text me before you called me? Like that seems to be a thing on social media. Okay. Like if you call me before texting me, I'm not going to answer.
I'm not going to pick up.
And I'm just like, why? Like, you know who's calling. So what's the big deal?
I hear you.
And of late, people have been just calling me either to just talk or to ask me for work or whatever. And I value that over anything else, because especially people I know, if I don't know you, I'm not picking up the phone. If I don't know the number, it's like, people that I know contacting me, it's like, and we can have, like, even if it's 5 to 10 minutes,
it still
has the weight of your voice. And I mean, there's so much that texting can't do. You can't translate tone in text, like, you can interpret that stuff. So value and community and all that's a lot for me.
No, for sure. And it's just something that you mentioned that's a bit of a nuance. It's like, as much as we're coming out of things and I am going to see people in person, the fact that we've kind of done this strange, we can do like a Zoom date, or like, you know, I don't know if you've done, but like, I'll have tea and we'll do it over Zoom, or we'll write something over Zoom. I don't think that's going to necessarily fade out of my life, because it is almost a slight other option that's not quite a text that's kind of weaseled its way in, where now sometimes I'll be like, okay, it's looking like we're just not able to meet. Do you want to just do like a tea Zoom and slight level up if you can't get that in person? So honestly, now that we're talking about it, I like that we're at a level where we're like, I want a little more than a text, maybe a little more than a call. They want to actually see you, but I can't get to you. It's nice.
And being in different cities and different countries, you know, it allows you to connect with people, even though you can't physically embrace. You still have that, you know,
visual. I don't think it's gonna go away. At least not in my life. It's a nice other option for some kind of closeness. Yeah.
The joke of it is, I've been doing this for a while.
Yeah.
I've had long distance relationships. I've been in long distance relationships.
Yeah,
and so it wasn't Zoom, but there was Skype.
Mm-hmm,
you know, and Skype is essentially the same kind of thing where you use
it
a
is.
Program to do a video face to face chat. So it's not unusual to me, but I'm glad that more people are open to it, because it allows for like you can have a date with somebody. And it's safe. One, it's safe. You know, if you're going on a date, like, you know, a Tinder date, and then you say, you know what, let's have a video chat first. You know, you can meet the person, you can cook your food, they can cook their food, you can literally sit down and eat together and talk. And it's safer-ish than like meeting the person completely in person.
It is a new world in many ways. It's made these little nuances that I don't think are just going to get snuffed out. So,
absolutely. And earlier on, you talked about like you were doing your projects. You were in the middle of your projects, and the onset of the pandemic kind of put a stop to that. Tell us a little bit about your origin story.
Ooh.
Right? Like, that's one of the things.
It's not as deep as Batman, but it's like, it's pretty good.
Batman is a rich white multi-billionaire white man. Mental health people. So we don't need to talk to Batman. We don't talk about Batman.
Origins. Okay. So straight off, I would say my start began as a young girl. When it comes to creativity, the place that I trace it back to the most is my mother actually providing me with a journal at a very, very young age. I think I always had some things I needed to work out, but didn't mean necessarily I was doing them with her. And it was priceless for giving me that. And what's even more priceless is she specifically said to me, I will never look at this. She didn't just give me, a notebook and say, do your thing and, be up in the air. She literally was like, this is for you to cherish. And if there's one thing that you must know is that I will never look at what you put in there. So I poured my heart. And from doing that kind of exercise, pardon me?
That's beautiful, because oftentimes we hear about parents going into their children's journals and reading their private thoughts and stuff like that. And that's really commendable, because she was telling you, you can trust me. I am setting this boundary of I will not violate your private thoughts, which is amazing.
From there, that's where the pouring of expression came out, just unhindered, all of it. My dad actually has most of my little journal books now, since I was living with him in high school, and I'm slightly worried what I put in there, because I really let it go. I trusted the written word. That's where the love of that came. It developed into poetry as I started growing older and maybe not necessarily wanting to do confessions in a journal-like way. I could do confessions in a poetry-like way. Mm-hmm. That naturally progressed to, I heard Kanye West, Never Let Me Down song.
Okay. Yeah.
And, or Never Let You Down, or something like that. And there was this guy named Jay Ivy right at the end. And he does this thing. And I was a teenager and I didn't know what this thing was. I'm like, it's not rapping, but it's not just speaking. What is this? And until Mos Def dropped his show,
Def
Poetry Jam?
Yeah.
Suddenly this whole world opened where I'm like, oh my gosh, I know what this is and I want to be part of it. I want to do this. From there came to like practicing all the time in front of like a video and just like running through my words, actually giving life to the words that were on the page. And I got such a deep connection with that. I will say at the same time, film and painting were developing kind of at the same time. Those were another modes of getting everything out. Yeah. But I guess since like some of the central focus has been poetry, because we met out in Montreal and I was already delving into it. I would, before I did a show with you, I had this process of going to open mics when no one knows who I am and not inviting a soul, and just kind of jumping on stage, saying my piece. And I would often get people who, did want to say some good things to me, but I could not have, it was two different personas. I had to literally leave the venue as soon as I did head home, get off and just be like, I can't talk. I'm so nervous. Like, I can't do any, that was my start. It just like show up, pop up, do it. And by the time I met you, you gave me that first kind of inkling of, no, this is not just like an open mic. This is your time. And it's I'm going to pay you what I can, because like, you're an artist. And suddenly this word artist started coming into my head. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay, you see something in this, right? So poetry kept taking off there. To fast forward, the actual project, Voetry, which has taken up the bulk of my time in recent years, stemmed from me doing freelance with video work and really trying to build my portfolio and thinking to myself, like, what do I want to film? My mother was actually another person in that realm. Like, my dad's always been there too, but my mother was also in that conversation where she was finding my frustration quite simple. You don't have a body of work. Just get up, pick the camera up, and film something. Yeah. And in my head, I was complicating it, like, that's not how it works. You know, you need to inspire in this way and do it this way. And I actually stopped to, I do listen to her. She doesn't believe me, but I do listen. Mm-hmm. It might take a minute. And good I thought process, to myself, if yeah. I was going, right?
Yeah.
If I was going to film myself, what would I film? And spoken word poetry was like number right one. Up there.
Yeah. No, that always makes sense to me. Like, a lot of people, like, I listen to a lot of the motivation speakers, and they're mm-hmm. always like, oh, you know, you need to work hard, and this needs to be hard, and it's hard, and it's difficult, and you'll only grow through difficulty,
and you'll become
a diamond through pressure, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, now I'm going to be 42 in a few days, and I'm like, why? Why does everything have to be difficult? You know, I feel like we're caught up in this. We have to make everything difficult. It doesn't mean that you don't work diligently and smart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like,
mm-hmm.
because there's a difference between working hard and working smart. Because working smart can take a lot of time. It can mm-hmm. take a lot mm-hmm. of energy. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be hard. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, like, I'm very fascinated with words. I'm a poet as well. So words, when people are saying words, it's like there's meaning and weight to them. And mm-hmm. we need to mm-hmm. be cognitive of the fact that maybe the words that you're using are not the ones that we need to hear.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we should go with what makes us most excited.
Mm-hmm.
If what makes you most excited is poetry, then do that.
Mm-hmm.
Film your poetry. Because... Mm-hmm. the possibilities afterwards is endless, right?
It is.
Like you can start filming poetry, and then you know what? You're like, okay, I love this, but I'd like to film a scene. Like, I'd like to make, it's, I'm going to use my poetry, but I'm going to film a scene with the poetry where two people mm-hmm. are going back and forth with the poems. Mm-hmm. And then that goes into like, and that becomes a longer scene of like 10 minutes. And mm-hmm. then that grows, and you're like, well, I'd like to make a short film that is
that's where my all mind poetry, has gone.
But it's like, you know, and then it becomes a short. And then the next thing you do, you're doing a feature film that incorporates poetry. And, you know, it goes into Paramount and Scotiabank Cinema and this and that. And it grows. But it's like, I feel like people are so caught up in like, you got to work hard to do this thing. And if you don't work hard, you're not going to grow. And I'm just like...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's necessarily true anymore. Yeah. Maybe it's just because I've already done all the hard work. I'm just like, forget that.
I'll add like another level to it. Not only did I have that it has to be something super hard, super serious. I also had this concept of, how do you say, action has to follow, you know, motivation. Right. Action has, like, I have to get this real deep spark of motivation before I can act.
Yeah.
And I actually, that poetry stems from, you know, I don't necessarily have that worked out, but I'm literally going to use the Nike saying and just do it.
Right.
And motivation can follow. I think that's a nice way of remembering everything doesn't have to be linear and line up so perfectly. You can actually just I guess I'll also advocate for, you know, when I can't write, I've actually developed a poetry group where we just kind of randomly freestyle some words. I'm not motivated, but next thing I know, I did the action, and through the action, something stems.
Yeah.
So if you're in a place where, anyways, I've been telling kind of people a little bit more, if you're in a place where you're just kind of still, don't feel you have to be doing for the sake of doing is okay. Just action. Like, why am I, like you said, what's all the hard, what's all the backstory with this? No, you're purely doing it for the sake of mm-hmm. doing something. That's huge.
Yeah. And I feel like if you're doing something that you love, it'll never be hard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It will have its challenges. It'll take energy. Yeah. It'll take time, but it won't be hard. And I feel like it shouldn't be hard. Like, I have a son, and I want to teach him that you have to work smart. You have to be diligent in how you're working, but you don't have to kill yourself. You don't have to work hard and like break your back and then, you know, like, no.
That's fair.
Be diligent, be detailed, be consistent, be increase the intensity if you have to, but don't ever work hard. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Africa Spence, aka Des. We do have to take a quick break, play some music, pay some bills. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
I will be one of the greatest. That is a vow, yeah, that is a promise. Always wanted to be famous. Just being real, yeah, just being honest. My haters won't always be nameless. Give them no clout, I give them no power. Creators built different, they ancient. Sooner than later, I will be ours. I keep an eye out for the numbers. I stay in contact, synchronization. To infinity, even beyond it. I am a common, no destination. A lot of things I am above, and there are a lot of things that are above me. Do not come for the people I love, cause then I get scary, then I get uglier.
Let's fast forward this red tape.
When I press play, you ejected. Boarding on this way now. Sitting next to an old flame.
Memories could switch lanes, so I'm sitting lazy with a new aim. We had food and two shots, then we got to my spot. This time I'ma get my hopes up, so real I need no makeup. Life is made of rain gift. I mean, you were so fantastic. Felt like it was magic, our connection was so instant. Time to leave our romance, we're side to side facing turbulence. Not once, not twice, we gave a chance. The zone we flown could stand a chance. I take my hand, last chance. We got so high, now we're landing. I'm feeling down the resistance, but there's no stopping.
And we fly one more time.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is the creator, founder of Voetry, which is a docuseries combining spoken word poetry and visual arts. Her name is Africa Spence, and I know her for a long time, long, long time, as Des. Des, thank you so much for being here. You know, I know you're really busy. I've seen your work. I'm like, I always tell you I'm proud of you because, you know, I think you need to hear it every once in a while. Because you're doing really amazing stuff. You're doing stuff that I wanted to do a long time ago. And for one reason or the other, I stepped away from it. And I'm very proud of the work that you're doing because the quality is impeccable. I can tell that you take the time to, like, make sure that the quality of the photography that is being done is good. The graphic design, you know, I saw the evolution from when you first started filming where it was like, you know, available light type of situation to now it's like there's more control over the settings.
Yeah,
as a filmmaker myself, someone who studied film at Concordia and at Dawson, you know, like, I'm just like, wow, you know, I'm just like, yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, that means so much, especially since I've been a one-woman show for at least the, you know, first three kind of years of putting things in. Like you said, we're filmmakers, it's kind of like learn as you go. I've developed from grabbing a lamp in my bedroom to like light something to actually having a professional, you know, set it up. So it's made a difference, and this year is going to be even better. I've got a lot more under my belt when it comes to resources.
Nice. So my question to you is, because when I met you, the first time I met you, actually, you were working with Dwight Best, and you were doing a lot of filming of events and stuff like that.
Yes.
What made you interested in doing film in the first place?
Oh, man. We touched on earlier, you know, my start when it came to expression through journal writing.
Yeah.
And as much as I'd like to say, you know, one kind of came out of at a different place in my life, they all almost stemmed around the same time, almost like three different, you know, alternate universes kind of develop in their own kind of stem. So my three are spoken word poetry, film, and painting. When it came to film, that really lends itself to me having an extreme value for memories. At first, that's what it was. Even now, you can ask me, what's your most prized possession? And that's my photo album. If a fire happens, I'm trying to save my photo album. I feel like I can't, right? I can't replace those. So I was obsessed with capturing moments. And anytime I had an opportunity to, even if it was just capturing an event, I'm in it. It's part of me, and I know you know this because you're an artist, like all three of those have just been like breathing. So Dwight kind of gave me the opportunity to jump in and, you know, practice. A lot of things have been self-taught. I've done, you know, programs here and there, but when it comes to actual technical, even now, there's still a lot I don't know. I just know the part of creating. I know I want to pick it up and make something happen.
Yeah.
And I am starting to humble myself a little more and learn more of the technical, but yeah, it's innate. It's what I do.
Mm-hmm. And was movie watching a big thing for you or like?
Ooh, yes. I you hit a nail on the head. I will say, now that I'm more in the industry, it is a bit embarrassing because I do kind of live under a rock. I watch a lot of content, but I don't necessarily know, you know, the names of the actors or the names of the directors. When I took film studies, obviously I had to, you know, get the basics, but I don't really follow artists that much or go into detail that much. I simply like experiencing, and I can tell you, you know, how I felt after watching a film. So the love of film, I keep mentioning my mom a lot. My dad has always been there too. My mom is, I guess, more sometimes on the creative side, but literally she was the kind of mom, she had me really young, and we didn't get to spend a lot of time with each other that much because, you know, she was working often. The time that she had free was usually at night when I should be in bed getting ready for school. But my mom still wanted to spend time. So there were days where she would be like, "You want to go watch a movie?" And we would just kind of like middle of the night go to like some theater that's like next to empty. And I shouldn't be saying this, but like we watch it quite a few. I don't know if other people know, back then you could kind of watch more than one movie. getting in on one movie ticket, it wasn't the weirdest thing.
No,
I was watching.
Still do that to this day, I'm sure.
I still do that, but like I was watching some adult movies because we would buy the ticket for the child movie,
right,
and we were cartoons. Going to the adult movie. So I was in it from the beginning. I was in it.
Yeah, it was a huge part of my family life as well. I mean, we used to rent six videos, videos every weekend.
Blockbuster.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was in Jamaica, so we had our own version of bootleg Blockbuster, where like they bought the one tape and then recorded 10 of them.
I hear you.
Printed it out.
I actually have that experience, but with I'm also a lover of anime, and my mom used to love Korean soap opera. So we would go to Chinatown, and they would have all the little bootlegs.
All the bootleg stuff.
I heard soap operas, and as a treat to me, she'd be like, "Okay, pick any anime you want." Oh my goodness, I love that. That's other storytelling. Anime is huge for me.
And as you speak about anime, I have to ask, because I've seen your art, and there is, like, now that you say that you had a love for anime, there seems to be an influence of anime in there. So, like, Yes,
absolutely. When I was in elementary school, the first things I was trying to replicate were like Pokemon or Sailor Moon. Those were my bases of, I want to draw something cartoony. What am I referencing? I wasn't really drawing like Simpsons. I was drawing anime. That's where the root was.
And what I love is that you translated this animation into, it reminds me of the way that you draw reminds me of the cartoon Aeon Flux. It also reminds me of this artist. I used to have one of his pieces. I don't remember his name, but he used to draw black bodies, but like really always in like a jazz club type of setting.
Oh yeah,
really like elongated bodies and really like looking real smooth.
I should know him. You saying that, I should know his name because it was a big thing.
I feel like I should as well.
It was a big thing when he was coming out. I think others listening
in the early 2000s,
they'll know. They'll know.
And I find that your art has like a bit of both in it, incorporated in it, depending on your pieces, of course.
Those are some huge compliments, Kim. That is huge.
I'm just talking the facts. Telling the facts. So, okay. Like, how much, and, like, I love that you obviously focus on black bodies and black women as well. And, like, why did you decide to go in that vein and that kind of style?
Honestly, again, going back to the fact that, like, all three of my disciplines have kind of coincided, again, the poetry, the film, and the painting. And I actually had to learn that I was focusing on black bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's in a very strange way. I'll jump a little into the film one. When I started poetry, the person that I was working with, my uncle, he was, he's a producer, and he couldn't really take on my project, but he could at least, you know, help tell me a little information and give me some feedback.
Yeah.
And one of the first things, and he's a black man, one of the first things he did kind of really have to specify is that, okay, I hope you know, you're going to be entering this world of urban. This is what's going to be classified as, this is like the category, and you know, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I was very, I don't know if the word is naive, but just unaware of the fact that I was making a statement, even if this is simply my life. These are simply the friends that are volunteering. This is simply the family that are volunteering. These are the bodies, right? Right. Yeah. These are the bodies that are around me. So I was simply capturing my community, but that ended up showing me that, oh, this actually stands out because you're making a statement in spaces where we don't take up space.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I'm getting comments saying, you know, I'm glad that you're making space for this. And I can't even necessarily take credit because it wasn't, at least at the time, as intentional. It was capturing my truth. Mm-hmm. Now that I've seen, oh, wow, this stands out because we don't take up space.
Wow.
I'm making it more intentional when it comes to the painting. I will say that was me finding out, and I loved the anime, but the examples of things that I was finding beautiful around me were black women, particularly black bodies. So I just naturally combined, like, what do I want to draw? I know the styles, but what am I familiar with? I have, my paintings often have oversized lips. I have very big, broad, you know, beautiful lips. I have, you know, a big, broad, beautiful nose. And I just, features that you can't deny have a blackness to them. Mm-hmm. I love it. It's so beautiful. But it wasn't necessarily it must be black. It was black.
Like, I'm black, y'all. And I'm black, y'all. And I'm blacker than black. And I'm black, y'all.
I love that song. There, and now it's evolved to me seeing I am doing a service in a way. I've represented in the poetry realm over 20 black artists, some other people, like, I'm open to any, but there are definitely like at least over 20 black artists that have been featured in poetry, and I just didn't know we weren't taking up space.
I can totally relate to that as well, because when I reflect on the shows that I've produced, it's almost always been majoritarily black folks and people of color on stage. Have I had white folks as well? Of course, absolutely, because the community is, we have a lot of white folks around us, and the artistic community has white folks as well. It's normal, but my community, the people that I love, the people that I respect, the people that respect me,
and majority
of them and support me, the majority of them are people of color and black people. And, you know, I didn't make that connection either in the beginning. It was just, oh, these were some of the people that are performing some of the most erotic poetry that I know. I'm gonna ask them if they want to be in this show, we're gonna move from there. It wasn't like a, oh, I need to get all the black people because you
know. I know it wasn't this. Why can't we just be like? Why couldn't it just be a reality?
And it's this dual. Yeah. It's this dual edge. It's this dual edged sword because it's like, I just want to speak my truth, but then you end up having the responsibility of like representing a group within your genre as kind of maybe one of the few innovators.
You're hitting on something that's been really hard for me because I've never been particularly political. Of course, I, you know, get behind statements and I get behind things, but I've also been one of the many, and I'm not proud that, you know, don't feel as confident, you know, standing in a crowd and demanding to be seen. So when I started getting into this space, like you said, it's a responsibility, and I really had to ask, especially this year, now that I'm deciding to be more intentional. It's a statement, whether I like it or not, I'm making a statement because it is almost 100% black. And what you're describing, it's almost like, is that fair when all I'm trying to do is speak my truth? I don't know. I don't know the answer yet, but it's, if I keep going this route, it is black. It is blackness. I'm not going to deny it. That is a huge influence. What comes with that? I hope I'm ready for it. I hope I'm ready for that responsibility. And I'm again glad that I can at least say this stems from my community. Like we just said, you are the ones who supported. Yeah. You are the ones who showed up. You are the ones. I was raised by a black woman, by a black man. You are the ones who brought me into this world, so I can't cut
that. You can't deny that. You can't deny that part of you. But it's beautiful that, you know, the initial intention is like, I love poetry, I love videography, I'm combining the two. I made poetry, and who can I get? Who can I put in front of my camera?
You.
Oh, right? You all are black. I don't care. Let's do it.
It's an afterthought.
Yeah. Because once we grow up after a certain age, we're almost forced to identify as something. We identify as black, or we identify as Afro-Caribbean, or we identify as African ascended or descended or whatever the case may be. But at the beginning of the day, when we introduce ourselves, my name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and I'm here with Africa Spence. It's not the black person who has the name possessed. It's like, these are our names. Boom, let's go. And then we just, all of a sudden, like, okay, you're speaking in front of people and you're representing, and now people are saying, oh, well, if you're doing this kind of thing, it's not a representation of us. I'm like, how is that not a representation of us if I'm of the community?
You're right.
I'm talking about poetry and I'm talking about, and I have poetry that touches on trans issues, like, and then black people are like, no, you don't represent the community. They're like, well, I'm from the community and these are issues. Folks in our community are facing these issues. How am I not representing the community by speaking on these issues? You know, and like, it really can get really stressful and really, really daunting to like, okay, now I have to make sure that I fit the quota of the blackness because, it's expected of me now.
I'm entering that realm, and I'm sorry, you're just touching on the like, I'm trying to be intentional. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What does that mean, being intentional? Does that mean I always, you know, right now I'm curating poems. And like I said, I'm not necessarily the most political. And I have poems literally talking about, last season, talking about, you know, police brutality and death, just straight facts. Yeah. This is not necessarily my lived reality. It's definitely one that touches my soul and affects me all the time, but it's not my lived reality. And yet I have to make the decision, am I representing that? And so far, I don't know what it will be in the future, but so far, I want Bowetry's essence to be an open mic essence. And you know what I mean, as in some poetry nights are themed. I'm not saying we never have a theme, but a lot of, you know, open mics, you get there and you don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. You can get, you know, from someone talking about love to someone talking about a trauma to someone just making a joke about, I don't know, like the funniest thing. Mm-hmm. You have no idea and you kind of have to just take it as it is and you get a hodgepodge of things. I'm realizing more and more now, I do have to try to package it a little bit more for people to process, just like how, you know, themed ones kind of come about, you know, one specific on love, at least people know exactly kind of what they're going in for. So I'm doing a bit of a mix of that now.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is I have these stories and, you know, maybe I'll be like, okay, I already have two stories that really talk about, you know, blackness and, you know, maybe a type of brutality. Should I add another one? I'm choosing between three from each, you know, artist, and I am asking myself the question, am I doing us justice? Like, did I keep that one out maybe because it was hitting a realm that, like, I didn't want to hit and I don't want to quiet people because an open mic is your moment for what's your truth.
Yeah.
It is responsibility. I am now nitpicking what goes in, and I'm being much more intentional with the project because I'm packaging it a little bit more now. I'm making it a solid, cohesive thing. So that's a power that I'm being given.
You're also, I believe that you're also kind of in the position of like, am I censoring my artists? Why not playing this particular piece or that particular piece, you know?
And it might be as innocent as, I kind of like the one that's a little more lighthearted, but did I do a disservice to the one that is seriously hitting some hardcore thing? Am I not allowed to just, I just kind of like this one better, you know, it gets difficult. I'm just entering that realm now.
I can imagine that it's a really, really interesting space to kind of like orient your mind around. Mm-hmm. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Des, aka Africa Spence, the founder, creator of the passion project Votary, which is a docuseries combining spoken word poetry and the visual arts. We do have to take a quick break and pay some bills, play some music, keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT.
Real food you want, come to Mango Bay every day.
Real food. Mango Bay Restaurant, located in the heart of downtown Montreal, 1236 Mackay Street, Suite 201. For reservations, please call 514-875-7082 or visit mangobay.ca. Real food.
Let's get together and feel all right.
Skin looks like pearls. Skin looks like pearls.
Skin looks like
pearls. Best thing in the land. Never change it for anybody else. And brown skin, girl. Skin just like pearl. The best thing in the world.
I'll never change it for anybody else. Singing.
She says she really grew up poor like me. Don't believe in nothing but the Almighty. Just a little jeans and a pure whitey. She never dream forever be nobody wifey. Yeah. She want I mean a pretty but your heart is a maze. Play you like a villain cause she caught in a way. Tonight I am walking away. 9 to 5 mine and I grind. Tonight I might fall in love. Depending on how you hold me. I'm glad that I'm calming down. Can't let no one come control me. Keep dancing and call it love. She fights it by falling slowly. If ever you are in doubt, remember what mama told me. Brown skin girl, your skin just like pearls. You're back against the world. I never tried you for anybody else. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
say make a Buddha. In a Calcutta. In a Calcutta. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In a Calcutta. Oh, oh, she say make a Buddha. Mama, she be sass and she carry full fun. And she love the boy from my head no go down. If I pull it out, she say make a pull down. Say my love a healer than a miracle now. Don't slow down, you got that easy boost now. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. She say she like it not, but she really love it out. She say my thing are long and they come out for her mouth. She say I keep it spinning like it and about. She don't know when she's screaming, she don't know when she dey shout. The way I lick her clean, she think I'm a laundry man. The way I eat her thing, she think I'm an animal. The way my thing is sweet, it be like vanilla. The way I make her feel, it be like a carnival. She go, yeah, 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 yeah.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. We are Soul Perspectives, and you are listening to CKUT on 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominic Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Africa Spence Noerzdes, and she's a second-generation Jamaican-Canadian, a lover of all things arts with a speciality in film creation, painting, and spoken word poetry. And she has combined all of these loves into a beautiful passion project known as Voetry, which is a docu-series combining spoken word, poetry, and visual arts, and of course, filmmaking. Des, thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
I love the conversation so far. Like,
oh, I've been loving it too.
I want to talk to you because I've known you a long time, and you have had your bouts with mental health, mm-hmm. and you have used your art to support your mental health. What are some of the things that you have gone through? What can you share with us? What do you feel comfortable to share with us?
Yeah, it's just interesting. You're coming to me at a time where I am. I have a lot of distance from some of the worst times, mm-hmm. and I'm looking to figure out my voice and what my message is. And it includes mental health. It just can't not include it.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll start with, like, I've had, you know, different bouts of different challenges. But regardless, I actually had to be honest with myself in the fact that mental health has always been important, even before the challenges, because again, you'll like this because it ties back into to me mentioning this twice, starting off with a lot of journaling at a very young age, mm-hmm. expression had been a therapy, like has been a rock, it's been there for me. So art is so therapeutic, and I've always needed it. I've had, you know, definitely troubles with, like, anxiety from young, troubles with what I kind of learned were, you know, bouts of depression, troubles with just, you know, life in general, and I've been able to manifest art through it. It wasn't until late high school and early university that things just fully bubbled over, literal break in my mental health, and I had to, you know, stop the schooling. Everything stops. Not everyone knows that reality, but when your mental health says we're done, mm-hmm. Everything stops. Yeah. Everything. And honestly, I am blessed because I had supports when I was so out of it that, you know, paying a bill was not going to happen, or feeding myself was not going to happen. I did hit some extreme levels. I had family that were able to be there to say, you know, if you can't walk right now, we will walk for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that can make the difference. As much as I don't want to be too somber and sound too exaggerating, but this is something I carry every day, that the difference between me and someone who's maybe on the street and not getting the mental support that they need is, one, I also have a strong fortitude. I'm not going to act like I'm not strong myself.
Yeah.
But two, I also had a community. And if I didn't have it at my worst times, there are a lot of places that I could have ended up, and I didn't. So it definitely humbles me how fine of a line that really is, and it may not hit people, but one, I'm going to do a Batman reference.
okay.
A Killing Joke.
Right.
All it takes is one bad day.
Mm.
One bad day.
Yeah.
can change everything.
Yeah.
I don't know if we have much comic book fans on here, but they'll know. They'll know. And if you don't know, go read that. Even if you don't like think you like comics, read that comic. I'm not necessarily a super comic fan, but that one definitely hit. Yeah.
And to stay on that particular Batman reference, where that reference is coming from is the Joker had shot Jim Gordon, so Commissioner James Gordon's daughter, and then kind of put him through a visual, physical, mental torture of seeing pictures and video of what he did to his daughter, and wanting that to break
Jim
Gordon.
To show anyone this will happen, you know?
Yeah, and while it did affect Jim Gordon, it didn't break him completely. He was still able to have the mental fortitude to have gone through that torture and still came out on the other side a good person. And it kind of, to stay in the vein of Batman references, when you think about the second Christian Bale Batman, where the Joker put bombs on the two boats. One is a boat full of prisoners, and the one's a boat full of civilians. And then gave each other the remote control, the trigger to blow up the other boat. He was saying, like, you know, they're gonna kill each other. They're gonna blow each other up. And at the end of it, that is a very stressful, because to know that someone else has the ability to kill you, and you could kill them first.
Absolutely.
That is a huge stress that you have to deal with. Absolutely. So, as much as I'm like, Batman is a rich man and he just beat up poor people with mental health, there are gems. There are gems in the stories. There are gems in the films as well. So did you use your art in order to support your mental health?
Yeah, absolutely. How do I say, like, it did, and maybe other artists can say this too. When I say, and when I repeat, when mental health, like, knocks on your door and says, like, I'm here, everything stopped. My art also did stop. Right. And it did, in a way, die. And people were seeing me, they weren't recognizing me, especially without it. So there was a lot of encouragement to get back in it. And I don't know if maybe you might identify with this, or someone that's listening might identify with this, but it's really hard when you're not yourself and someone is kind of reminding you, like, why don't you go back, you know, to that? Like, that's not who I, that's, as great as that would be, things have changed.
That's
and
not
I don't
who I
know
am anymore.
It's not who I am. It doesn't mean I know what I can be later, but just understand that you gripping for that old me is hurting me because I'm not them. Thankfully, art seems ingrained enough in my soul that it came back to me. I'm so grateful. I'm not going to necessarily say it's like a religion, but I feel blessed that it granted me, you know, when you think of, like, Greek mythology, they talk about, like, muses and so forth. Like, I like to look at that persona, but, like, my muse came back to me and just graced me with their private presence. And to be able to enter creative space, like, I know you know this, it is a zone. And if you can tap into it, it is borderline religion. It is a space. It is a power.
It can become very cult-like.
Right. I'm so glad I get to knock on that door and have access to that space again, because I thought it was severed and it got me through it. It does.
It's so funny that you say that, you know, because I think back to the days of Mad Poetics when when we had the open mics and we'd have the chant, when I say mad, you say poetics, mad poetics, mad poetics. And like up till now, well, not now because I haven't done any public performances, but up to the recent times when I would go and do a public performance and someone who used to come to the show, you know, knows me, and someone would be like, mad, and then someone would be like, poetics. And it's very, I never thought about it in this religious sense, but it's like, It is very religious. It's almost like a cult because, you know, when you look at the cult, like the cult videos and the very highly religious videos, there's always this call and response, and like there's almost like dare I say, an obsessive way that the audience is like grabbing onto the character or the person who's like leading them. So yeah, it is, and it's a very. There is nothing like having an entire audience in the palm of your hand. Like, I can understand why, like, people like Michael Jackson, you know, before he died, he had to come back and do This Is It. Like, you know, I can understand that pull and like how artists who fall into deep depression after, quote unquote, retiring from performing full time, you know, like how that can affect you, because it's like a drug. There's this sense of power.
Telling you, it is the best. If there is a good drug, art is a good drug. So I will tell you, like, when I was much younger, I used to smoke, like, marijuana. It actually kind of helped with the anxiety for a good period of time. But it's no longer fit with my day-to-day, and it actually ended up contributing to the anxiety later on. It's hard to explain, but definitely helped at the beginning, but by the end of things, it just wasn't for me. However, I joke a lot with my friends when I'm in the middle of making a season for poetry. I'm starting off, you know, I'm grinding, and I've had to learn to pace myself, because I used to be so hooked on, I can't wait until this is done, and so much so that sometimes I would rush. I would be like, okay, I just edited it, it's perfect. And I did have some friends that I could send it to. They're like, I think you need to, like, go back and, you know, review. And I hated hearing that, because I just want to get to the, the project done. You know the feeling, Kim, when a project is wrapped up. But it has also now become a drug that I'm like, it will be even better if you're intentional. It will be even better if you're slow and you take your time and you execute. So now that I am, every year I'm doing a new season. So as I work, I am working towards that, like, and not that instant gratification. I would love it, but it is so much more of a payoff when you're done. That is the highest euphoria. I don't know how to describe it. I'm smiling from ear to ear when that happens. Oh my goodness.
And I kind of agree with the people that you work with, because I can't tell you how many times I've like written a letter for a job application, or written an email, like an important email for somebody or something else, and I spent like hours and hours and hours like reading it and rereading it and then putting it into like a document and making sure I correct all the words, and then I'm like, okay, good, I'm ready, let's go, boom, send it. I send it, and then when I go back a few days later and I reread the email or I reread the letter, I'm like, oh my God, it's full of mistakes that I didn't catch.
But you feel so good in the moment. You're like, I'm gonna get this.
So it's like that. It's like that drug shot. You get the drug shot, but then afterwards, when you come down off of it and you see with clearer eyes, you're like, whoa, I should have taken a little bit more time. Should have probably spaced it out over a few more days. Maybe not procrastinate as much.
That has been a lesson I've learned with like age. Age has definitely gave me some grace on that. I have to say.
And so you were able to take your mental health, go back, come full circle back to art. How did your art change from before you had the mental health kind of break to like afterwards?
Oh my goodness, that's a big one. Since art is almost life for me, I will say like life has changed in the way of the places that I ended up, particularly mid-university. Some people don't come back from, you know, you go to, institutions and, you know, they never walk away. So when I walked away, some doctors, to no fault of their own, but sometimes they see such kind of mental breaks that, like I said, people never bounce back from. So I'm not saying that they tried to discourage me, but they had very little hopes of like what my function would be, mm-hmm. What my future would be. Would I, you know, even be carrying a regular 9-to-5? Will I be able to support myself anymore? Like I was mentally broken to extents that I don't think people will really even understand hearing this unless you see the extremes.
Yeah.
So as life started creeping back, and trust me, it was not like a rushing back. I literally learned to walk again. Each thing became even more and more intentional. Mm-hmm. When you choose, again, not to be in a too dark place, but like life had lost so much glimmer for me. I didn't really want it anymore. I was pretty done. So when I made that choice of living and living intentionally, there is a really fine line. And I'm not saying that makes one person better than the other. I'm just saying there are some people who move through the world and they're living for the sake of living.
Yeah.
You know, they're going through the motions.
Yeah.
And there are, I have to say, and maybe I'm wrong, someone on here might say I'm wrong, but there are others who have been touched in a way where they're like, actually, every day that I breathe and I take and I go through challenges, I've intentionally chosen to stay and to go through it. And this is now almost like my life is now a passion. It is no longer movement by movement. It is like, I'm here and I am, anyways, it's really hard to form in words. So I hope I'm getting across a little bit of what I...
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
So yeah, the art, the fact that I can still create, oh my goodness. I don't know how to explain to people how touched I am. But like I said, that I can get into a creative space. I will tell you extremes that even social skills, like when you're isolated for a long period of time, mm-hmm. you don't even know how to keep up a conversation. I couldn't keep a conversation going for longer than 5 minutes. And as much as conversation is not necessarily art, connecting to your community is huge in the art process. So if I can't carry a conversation for more than 5 minutes because my mental capacity